40. Dancing. Tito knelt and tightened the laces of his Adidas GSG9s, respectfully reminding the Guerreros that it was time. He stood, flexed his toes, crossed 14th Street, and started up through the park, his hand on the iPod in its plastic bag in his jacket pocket. Juana, once in Havana, had taken him to a building of great and utterly decayed grandeur, though in those days he had had no idea that a structure of such age and intricacy might be found in any other condition. In the foyer, continents and oceans of distempered plaster were mapped on walls and ceiling. The elevator had shaken and screeched, carrying them to the top floor, and as Juana had heaved the cage-like metal door open, Tito had abruptly become aware of the drums he must have been hearing for some time, perhaps since they had first entered this street in Dragones. As they waited at the tall doors of the floor's single apartment, Tito had read and reread the handwritten message in Spanish on a grease-flecked slip of brown paper, fastened to the door with four thickly rusted carpet tacks. "Enter in the Spirit of God and Jesus Christ, or do not enter." Tito had looked up at Juana, raising his eyebrows in some question he wasn't quite able to form.
"It might as well say Marx and Lenin," Juana had told him.
The door had been opened by a tall woman in a scarlet headscarf, a lit cigar in her hand, who smiled broadly to see them and reached out to touch Tito's head. Later, beneath a portrait of Our Lady of Guadalupe and another of Che Guevara, the tall woman had begun the dance of the walking dead, and Tito, pressed close to Juana, squinting through fumes of cigars and sweet aftershave, had watched as bare feet softly slapped the ruined parquet. The Guerreros were around him now, talking among themselves in a language like weather, like high, fast clouds. He shivered within his jacket and walked on through the sunlight toward the bare trees with their green buds, Oshosi showing him dead spots in the square's human matrix, figures that were no part of the unconscious dance formed here by this clearing amid the long city's buildings. He didn't look directly at these pretenders, watchers. He adjusted his path, avoiding them. When he was closer to the canvas stalls of the market, he saw the old man, moving slowly along between displays of vegetables, his long tweed coat open to the warmth of the day. He walked now with a bright metal cane and seemed to have some difficulty with his leg. Oshosi rounded suddenly, sliding into Tito like a wind, dry and unexpectedly warm, showing him the convergence of the watchers. The nearest was a tall, broad-shouldered man with sunglasses and a blue baseball cap, doing a poor job of pretending to stroll casually in the direction of the old man, an S of tension marking his brow between the glasses and the cap. Tito felt the two behind him as if Oshosi were pushing thumbs into his back. He adjusted his course, making it plain that he was headed for the old man. He slowed and made a show of squaring his shoulders, hoping the men behind him would read and respond to this lie of the body. He saw the lips of the man with the sunglasses move and remembered what the one in Prada had said about their radios. Sistema was in each fall of his black Adidas. Pulling the iPod from his pocket, held in the open plastic bag, not touching it with his fingers. He was almost there, the Prada man's 10 paces, but black glasses was a mere 3 from the old man when the old man pivoted, gracefully whipping the cane up and sideways, at arm's length, into the side of black glasses' neck. Tito saw the S of tension erased from the man's brow as the cane struck, and for what seemed far too long, there was a face that consisted only of 3 holes beneath the visor of the blue baseball cap, the twin voids of the sunglasses, and the equally round and seemingly toothless black hole of a mouth. Then the man struck the sidewalk like something deboned, the loaded cane clattering heavily beside him, and Tito felt their hands on his shoulders and stopped moving forward. "Thief!" cried the old man with great force, his voice ringing out. "Thieves!" Tito backtucked as the followers' momentum carried them past him.
As he came down, Oshosi showed him his elegant cousin Marcos, smiling urbanely between two handsome displays of produce, and straightening from having recovered something from between the wooden sawhorses of a farmer's stand, a length of wood, Marcos gripping it firmly at either end with gloved hands, his feet braced, as a trio of men running in the direction of the old man seemed to strike an invisible wall and then to fly through it, becoming airborne. One landed on a farmer's display, and women began to scream. Marcos tossed the wooden handle of the tripwire down, as if discovering it fouled with filth, and strolled away. The two men who had been following Tito, realizing he was behind them now, spun in unison, their shoulders colliding. The heavier of the two was slapping at something on his neck. Tito saw the wires of a radio. "Red Team won!" the man declared, furiously, with a savage and inexplicable emphasis on whatever victory that might be, then lunged for Tito, shoving his companion out of his way to do so. Tito was having to feint, as if panicking, in various directions, in order to provide these two with the illusion of almost capturing him. Seeing the clumsiness of the one reaching for him, he decided that any more elaborate miming of fumbling and losing the iPod would be wasted. He dropped it, directly in the man's path, a square of white plastic separating as it struck the pavement. He pretended to lunge for it in order to underline the fact that it was there. His would-be captor, seeing it, reflexively batted him aside. Rolling with the blow, Tito came up running as the heavy man dove for the iPod. His companion tried to block Tito with a move he might have remembered from American football. Tito somersaulted between his legs and kicked off on what must have been one of the man's Achilles tendons, to judge by his sharp yelp of pain. Tito ran south, away from the intersection of 17th and Park, his destination, past the one from the Prada shoe department in a tradesman's paint-splashed overalls, in one hand a yellow box with three short black antennas. Around Tito ran the orishas, panting like vast dogs, scout and opener, opener and clearer, and Osun, whose role was mystery.